Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. I've lost track of how many articles or books have argued over the last few years that robots are going to take our jobs, or at least most of our jobs. So get ready, get scared, make sure your kids learn STEM and Mandarin and Spanish and design thinking and everything else they can think of to make them bulletproof when the robotic takeover arrives. But there are always contrarians, like James Besson, who started a high-tech company and then got interested in economics. Recently, he's been arguing that the conventional wisdom about the coming job drought is largely wrong. James Besson is a lecturer at Boston University and the author of the new book, Learning by Doing, The Real Connection Between Innovation, Wages, and Wealth. James, thanks for joining me.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
So a ton of people on this show, but pretty much everywhere, have said, look, if you examine these new technologies, the sort of new economy that's springing up, you'll find that it puts money in the hands of just a very few people. You don't quite buy that that's the way it has to be. Why?
Well, because we've seen it before. You know, the story of having tremendous new technology, tremendous new productivity from that, and at the same time having stagnant wages, growing inequality, it was true during the Industrial Revolution. It was true during the electrification period in the early 20th century. I don't think what we're going through today is exactly like what we had back then, but I think the underlying reasons and the challenges are the same. And the basic challenge is new technology is hard. It requires a lot of new knowledge and a lot of skills by a huge number of people, and it really takes decades before we figure out as a society how to do that. The prototypical technology of the Industrial Revolution was the power loom. It automated the weaving process. And at first, a power loom could produce twice as much cloth per hour of a weaver's time as a hand loom could. Over the rest of the century, they got up to a 50-fold increase in the amount of cloth that could be produced. And it was because of a number of things, but a large part of it was they figured out what skills the weavers needed and how to get them those skills. They figured out improvements in the technology and the machines. They figured out how to organize the workforce, how to organize the workplace in ways to make it all very efficient. So there was a huge learning process by weavers, by mill managers, by mechanics, that just took decades.
Now, if you go, though, from a situation where one person can weave so much cloth per hour, and then just a few years later, you've got a machine that can do 50 times as well.
Right.
Why don't you have massive unemployment, or do you?
Well, what happened is you didn't. The actual number of weavers grew. So there was this 50-fold increase.
How is that possible? People just wear new clothes every day, or what?
It's because people think in very static terms. At the beginning of the 19th century, cloth was expensive and people didn't use very much of it. As the technology improved, cloth became cheaper and cheaper, and they consumed much, much more of it. And that extra demand offset the labor saving of the technology so that the number of weavers didn't grow as fast as the population as a whole, but it kept on growing up until the 1920s.
Now, if you look at what's happening right now, would you say that one of the problems we're having is that we haven't taught the important skills to people out there who need those skills? I mean, is that why there's this sort of tension and friction and people are trying to figure out what's going on?
Well, the skills that matter are largely probably not taught in school. That's the first thing.
That seems like a problem.
Yeah, that makes it difficult. We're seeing a tremendous transition where old skills are becoming obsolete. People are losing jobs in some areas. Machines are replacing people in some areas. But new jobs are springing up, but they require different sorts of skills. Or in some cases, even the same occupation, the skills are changing. For instance, in bank tellers, you know, everybody thinks, okay, just like you said with the weavers, the bank teller, the ATM machine came along.
Right.
It was employed very widely starting in the early 90s. A huge increase. What happened to the bank tellers? Well, number one, the number of bank tellers didn't decrease. It actually increased slightly. What happened was, just as with the weavers, it increased demand for banking services. So,
really, the number of bank tellers, there are more bank tellers than there were before ATMs? What are they doing?
they are part of what's called the customer relationship team. They're basically marketing specialists much more than they are cash handlers. So their job changed. It became a job where cash handling was a large part of their skill, and now it's much more about customer interactions, helping the customer, possibly getting the customer interested in the higher margin financial services that a bank can supply. And banks are more competitive about marketing now, so there are a huge number more bank branches than there were back in 1980.
So those are the people with the comfortable chairs who say, you know, but we also offer mortgages and CDs.
Yeah,
would
you
be interested in those? Okay.
You've been there.
I have. I've been upsold by those people. I want to go back to something you said, which is we are not teaching the skills people need
right.
in school. Should we be teaching them in school?
School tends to be, when you think about technical skills, school tends to be the entry card. You know, every college graduate knows this dilemma. They get out there with a diploma and supposedly they're a skilled worker, but they can't find a job because all the jobs say experience needed.
Right.
There's a huge amount of learning about technology that happens on the job. And that's not just for heavy tech workers. That's for all sorts of ordinary people, learning how to use the technology, implement it well in a work environment.
So is it true when employers say, we cannot find the workers we need to do these jobs? And we have heard employers say, like in, you know, highly skilled manufacturing, like we don't have enough people. But then you have hundreds of thousands of people who say, I can't find a job, you know, help me out here. Is that because of this mismatch of skills?
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I think this confounds a lot of people because they see that there are plenty of college graduates out there, plenty of educated people, and there's this apparent mismatch. I can give you maybe a concrete example
sure,
might be helpful.
Sure.
But I worked in an industry, desktop publishing, computer publishing came along and it replaced the typographer. The job of the typographer was taken over essentially by graphic designers.
Mm-hmm.
So graphic designers first had to learn desktop publishing. And then along came the web, and they had to learn web publishing. And then along came smartphones, and they had to learn mobile publishing. And so there's this constant upheaval in what the skills are, what they learn in school. They may have a college degree in graphic design, but they may have learned print design, which may not be very useful. They've got to be able to teach themselves or find some other ways of acquiring these skills. So what you see in the workforce is the best and most talented ones can. They'll teach themselves the latest techniques, the latest standards. The average worker, though, lags behind. And so you see a widening gap where the top 10% are doing very well, but the wages for the median worker are not. And it's because, in a sense, the median worker doesn't have the skills that are really needed today. There's a mismatch.
So how has this been solved in the past? When you're thinking about the Industrial Revolution and weaving, did it happen that people in school started learning about power looms and how they worked, or they learned on the job?
It's a combination. So one of the problems is standardization. When you have rapidly changing things, for instance, graphic design, you know, 3 years ago, Flash was the standard that designers had to learn. Today, it's HTML5. When the standards change very rapidly, schools have a hard time keeping up.
What do you even teach somebody in school?
Right, right,
right.
One thing that happened was the standards became more constant. Not that they didn't, they kept changing. The technology kept advancing, and it's still advancing today, even in textiles. But it was in a framework where the basics could now be taught in school, and they could learn more on the job.
Okay, so do you think that schools need to change? Do you think government needs to get involved? Who is going to help? Forget about the top 10%. Who's going to help the other
average.
90% of people to figure out where they belong, what their job is going to be in a world of very new technology?
Yeah, everybody's got to help. So employers need to get involved in terms of providing training. You see some of the best employers doing work-study programs with community colleges where students can learn some things in the classroom and some things on the job. Industry groups are creating certification standards. So somebody learns on the job, their skills can be certified, and then they therefore become useful to another employer. Governments play a role in terms of encouraging things like employee mobility, in terms of encouraging vocational training where it's useful, and encouraging things like the creation of startups, and which tend to be organizations that that foster new skills.
Well, if you look at, you know, the late 1800s and then think about into the early part of the 20th century, the middle class really started to, you know, certainly by the 40s and 50s, rise up and get a very big share of the pie. Do you think that middle class wages are going to catch up with these technologies too?
Well, we're seeing, so it, you can look at mid-skilled jobs and see some areas where mid-skilled jobs are rising and strongly, and employment's rising. So, for instance, the healthcare sector is a very promising area where you're actually seeing a huge shift away from doctors and dentists and top-line providers to mid-skilled providers, nurses, medical assistants, physician's assistants, nurse practitioners, all sorts of technicians in EMR, radiology, even skills like occupations like licensed practical nurses, where it's typically a 12-month school training. They've seen rising wages. They've seen growing employment. The experience factor matters. It's experienced nurses who are earning the good wages. And it's largely because of new technologies. We have, for the licensed practical nurses, it's this new ambulatory surgery model where there are all these specialized clinics that do knee surgery or laser eye surgery. And it's an environment where the technology has been combined with a business model where people can learn on the job and they can benefit from that learning.
Well, when you talk about on-the-job learning, you've written that in these mills that rose up during the Industrial Revolution, there was actually a lot of on-the-job learning, which was kind of a surprise to me. Factory work was like an opportunity for enrichment.
It was. Lucy Larcom, who I start off the book with, was later became a college teacher. But while she was there, she described her experience as very much like a college education. And she was involved. She studied German. She studied botany. She heard leading lecturers of the day. She wrote poetry for one of the girls.
This is like at night after they were done up with the looms?
They were working 12-hour days.
Wow, and then going to botany lectures.
Exactly. And she became a well-known poet. Whittier became her mentor.
Wow. So, okay, I wonder then, is it possible that the narrative we hear about technology causing this huge loss of jobs is so wrong that, in fact, technology could lead to overall higher wages for people? Is that a possibility? Well, not just that we will make up this deficit that we're in, but that actually great things could come from
yeah,
technology.
I think it's possible. It's a challenge, though. Mm-hmm. Over the last 200 years, technology is responsible for a tenfold increase in the pay of the average worker. I mean, that's huge.
And I think people would be surprised to hear it because we do hear all the time about the gap, and it doesn't feel
right,
like. So
right.
How does that manifest itself?
Partly it's that things are cheaper because of the technology, but partly it's a worker who has critical skills is able to command much higher pay. So what you saw actually with the weavers, their wages were stagnant from the 1820s, 1830s through the Civil War. And then after the Civil War, they started to grow rapidly. By 1910, they were triple what they had been a century earlier. Their pay rapidly increased because at that point, basically, a labor market developed that made their skills highly valued.
So paint a picture for me of how you think that trajectory could potentially apply to the 21st century.
So the picture is seen in emerging details in the healthcare sector. You know, so you're seeing people without necessarily a whole lot of education and some with a lot of education going into jobs, learning valuable skills that relate to new technologies on the job. And not only is their pay going up, employment is going up. There's risk involved because at the same time that computers are creating those opportunities, they may be destroying other opportunities. But I think, at least I hope, that pattern can multiply and spread. You know, the evidence that the top 10% are doing well is a sign that there is a demand for those skills, and that demand, you know, the hope is that the demand will eventually be met.
James Besson is the author of Learning by Doing, The Real Connection Between Innovation, Wages, and Wealth. He teaches at Boston University. Thank you very much for taking the time today.
Thanks. This was fun.